Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 8 of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. I'm Becca, and this is a podcast that features members of the Virtual Coffee community. Virtual Coffee is an intimate group of developers at all stages of their coding journey, and they're here on this podcast sharing their stories and what they've learned. And we're here to share it with you. Here with me today is my co-host, Dan.
Thanks, Becca. Today we sat down with Aurélie Vérot. Aurélie is a software engineer originally from France, but who now lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. Like many of us, Aurélie has been working from home since the pandemic started, and she shared with us some of her experiences going through all that, as well as some important approaches and habits that allow her to be healthy and productive.
We start every episode of the podcast like we start every virtual coffee. We introduce ourselves with our name, where we're from, what we do, and a random check-in question. Today's question is, if you could be one kind of plant, what would it be? We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, I'm Becca. I am a front-end developer from a small town in Ohio. And if I could be any kind of plant, I really want to say like sequoia because they're really tall and cool, but I've never seen one in real life. An aloe plant seems useful because they're healing, but like air plants are really resilient and they're tiny and you don't have to do that much to take care of them. What? And that also seems good.
What was it? What kind of plant is that?
An air plant.
Air plant?
Yeah.
It's like from a video game or something?
No, it's not from a video game. It's like a real thing. It's like,
you know, aloe plants are only healing if you break off the, you know, you have to
some people can
destroy the plants.
Seems like,
although that's a whole different thing. Hi, I'm Dan. I am a front-end developer from Cleveland, Ohio. If I could be any kind of plant, I think like a maple tree or something would be cool. I was really trying to think of all the other kinds of plants that I know, and I can only come up with like three or four off the top of my head. I wouldn't want to be like, yeah, I think I'm just going to go with maple tree because they're cool. And like, plus it's on a whole country's flag, you know, so that's cool too. Mm. So that's going to be my
final. So it'd be like you, like, oh, it's just me on the flag. It's not any maple tree, it's me.
That's right.
Hi. My name is Aurélie. I am from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I am a software engineer. And I think I would be some kind of lavender. I lived in the south of France for a while, and I had like fields of lavender everywhere. It's just my favorite plant, I guess. So yeah.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah.
Lavender, pretty and... like, and useful, you know? That's good. It's a good combo.
I have three lavender plants in my front yard for the first time. It did not die. So I am very excited about that. So welcome. We are very, very happy to have you here on the podcast today. And we always like to start off the podcast with your origin story. So how did you get to where you are as a software developer today?
Yeah, so I'm a recent career changer. So before I was in quality, safety, and environment management in France. I moved in the US in 2015 and I couldn't work because of my visa. And so I took the time to raise my kids and make sure the family was fully integrated in the new environment. when I've been able to work, one thing I knew for sure that it was that I didn't want to pursue my previous career. So I tried different things. And at some point, I tried some coding tutorials on why that, mostly because my husband is a software engineer, and so it was an easy go-to, I guess. And I liked it. But it was like kind of hard for me to learn by myself. So at some point I decided to join a bootcamp And I did, yeah, 2 months and a half boot camp, 3 months boot camp. And then an internship for 6 months. And then I found my first job and I started in May.
That's awesome. That seems like a really fast journey. How long did it take you from the time you kind of started?
I started mid-2019 with my first tutorials. It was just learning Ruby, learning JavaScript. But I didn't really know what to do with that. I mean, it was kind of cool. I started to solve some algorithm, but I couldn't figure out how to use that to create like websites and applications and everything. So yeah, and I just tried to find my answers, you know, on Google, like everybody else. And there was so many information, I couldn't just grasp any. So yeah, I at some point just, I needed help to learn, I guess. And learning by myself, I know it's not where I'm the strongest. So yeah, I searched for boot camps that could allow me to continue to take care of the kids and, you know, and also being able to travel to San Francisco. Yeah. And I found one and I applied and it went really fast. Yeah, for sure. In like 2 months. It took between the decision, finding the good boot camp, and passing all the interviews for the boot camp. Yeah, in 2 months, I was enrolled. So, yeah.
What do you think? What was the difference in learning experience between learning on your own and joining a boot camp?
The problem I found with learning on my own was really this fire hose of information and about everything. It's you search something and you find searching for something for JavaScript and you find something for Python for, and you ask for some advice and people will give you an answer with what they know. And sometimes it's not what you are working on. And for me, it was just too hard to find how to really focus on something. I was absorbing opinions from everybody and I just couldn't make my own curriculum, you know. So having something more structured and also having someone I could ask all my questions, it was something I thought will help me better. So yeah, it was really, it was better for me. And also, so English is not my first language. When I started the bootcamp, I was not super confident with me talking English. So having someone who will take the time to talk with me, to understand where I don't understand things and explain me slowly, some stuff. It was really helpful. So yeah, I really appreciated the bootcamp for that. And I searched for online bootcamp at first. But I realized that to learn English, it was maybe easier for me to have the person in front of me. And you know, I'm a lot about reading lips when people talk. So it was really easier for me to have someone in front of me, like a real person. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so your boot camp was it a hybrid boot camp? Some of it was at home, some of it was on campus, or how was that structured?
So I chose an in-person boot camp. So it was supposed to be 12 weeks of in-person boot camp. And I started on January 20th. 7 of 2020. So everybody knows what happened in March. So I did 6 weeks of in-person and 6 weeks of remote learning because of COVID restrictions. it was really challenging. To be honest, I really liked the in-person way also because it made me meet a lot of people that I wouldn't have met otherwise. You know, when you're a stay-at-home mom, you meet moms and that's it. So yeah, in the bootcamp, I really met a lot of different people and it was really great to have like backgrounds. They all have different backgrounds. It was great. It was really helpful for me to talk with these people, for me personally and also for all the tech subjects. And switching to remote, well, first I had to, you know, you had to adjust. And also we didn't have this, the connection that we had before. Discussions were mostly on Slack. People didn't have time, even me, to like do some Zoom meeting after classes. So it was really different. Yeah, well, less interactions. But it went well in the end. But yeah, I really missed like the social part of it, which is strange because I'm usually someone like who loves to live in a cave and talk to nobody. But I guess it changed me. So yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of us learned some stuff about ourselves, you know, when the pandemic started and all the quarantine stuff happened, you know. So I feel the same way. You know, my natural thing is like, oh, I hate people. I don't want to be anywhere, you know, the same thing. Live in a cave, you know, and then all of a sudden when you're forced to not ever see anybody, it's like, oh, no, it turns out I actually do like people. I might not like, you know, lots and lots of people or anything, but yeah, that was an experience. I'm sure it actually I don't know if I'm sure, but the fact that you started your class kind of started all together, and you had 6 weeks, is that what you said before?
Yeah, 6 weeks.
The quarantine started. So that probably helped a little bit. I mean, you at least knew the teacher and you knew your classmates and stuff. So I imagine it was much harder, starting from scratch in that situation.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think I would have succeeded, maybe at all if it was online. I've heard many people talk to me about the same bootcamp that I did, but online, completely online. And I think you need some skills, like soft skills and everything, to really succeed that kind of online training. And these skills, I don't really have them, I guess, or maybe not enough. I don't know. Yeah.
It's definitely interesting. I don't know if I would, I mean, skills is an interesting word, but there's everybody kind of learns differently, right? And so it's more what you're suited to, right? I don't learn from lectures really or people talking, you know, but of course I have the same issue with video as well. I have problems. I don't know what the right word is, but the information doesn't stick in my brain, right? until I do things, but the self-guided stuff only works for me personally. When I am super into whatever it is, you know, I personally, I'm self-taught, but like I'm self-taught as in like, I learned things, but bit at a time, you know, bits at a time as I did things that interest me in college or whatever, like in my free time. And the idea of trying to do that from scratch now seems, you know, horrifying. So I can totally relate to like wanting the lesson planning and stuff like that you kind of talked about. Yeah, I would have no idea what to do or even to tell somebody what to do. You know, if somebody's like, oh, I want to learn how to be a developer, what should I learn? You know, I think I'd be like, I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah.
Learn some stuff. it seems really hard to do all on your own, like entirely on your own.
Yeah.
At least to me.
I'm the same. I think also that I need, like, it's not that I need some guidance all the way, but I think for to start, I need someone to guide me when I start. And I need to maybe show that I need to show someone that I understood something and to give me the go to be like maybe more confident and then certify myself. But yeah, I like to have like this person saying, okay, this, you know, now you know how to do it. You do it well. So go ahead and do more. That I need, I guess.
Yeah, even being in a traditional classroom, you can, when you see other students' responses to things, it's kind of acts as a gut check, right? Like, if you're like, wow, I'm really confused. Should I be confused? Are other people, like, you look around and you're like, okay, that person definitely looks confused too. So, like, in that sense, like, there's some community, and that kind of enables you to think like, okay, well, we're in this together. We all need to figure this out. So let's ask some questions, or like, okay, I'm not the only one that's having this experience right now. And just like having that community support, whether it's for a gut check or to say like, yeah, this is hard, it's tough, but you're doing a good job, just keep at it. Like, sometimes that's all you need. But when you're by yourself and there's so much information, it's oversaturated amount of information. Like you said, some of it's good, some of it's not. Some of it can apply to what you're working on. Some of them you don't recognize that you can't apply it yet, because there are simple things. Being able to hear other people talk about that, to ask questions and to see how people are working through things can be a huge game changer for that.
Yeah, and I had this experience. We had some exercise we were trying to, create like a new feature in class. And there was this kind of algorithm to solve for that. And I know that by myself, I wouldn't have been able to do it. And other people as well. But I had some understanding that helped them solve their things as well. And all together, we were able to deliver something that was working really well. So I think this is important as well, to have like people around you and people you can talk to and exchange. You spend way less time to solve problem and it's less frustrating in the end. So yeah, I think the learning experience is maybe better that way. I mean, but like you said, Dan, maybe for some people are able to learn as well by themselves. And I admire that.
I think it's good practice, though, to be able to learn with other people, because when you go out and start working, you're probably going to be working with a team of people. And the more comfortable you are communicating about things and asking questions, the better it's going to be overall, I think, for like being a part of a team, especially if it's a remote team.
Yeah. And that's something that I wasn't used to do in my previous career. It was more like you have one task to do and you have to do it by yourself and investors. And people were not really, available to help or things like that. You didn't ask, actually. And so this is something that I've learned with Cody. You have to ask. You have to ask for help. You have to ask for people to test your thing. You have, you have to ask for reviews. You have to ask for everything. So reaching out to people and say, hey, either I need someone to review what I've done, or I don't know what to do and I need help. That's something that I really learned. When I started coding, it's something that made me a lot uncomfortable at first, to be honest, because I like to be the person who is expert on something. And I like to be the one looking the answers. instead of asking them. But yeah, I changed. Now I'm asking questions all the time.
I totally feel that. You know, as a career changer too, and coming from an experience where I was the one with all the answers and having no support from other people, it definitely was a hurdle to get through. And, you know, I taught English for a lot of years, and people would always be like, wow, I bet you were a really good communicator. This is a just a very different role, and I was not used to communicating in that way. So, like, no, I wasn't. I'm working on it, though. You know, it is almost a new skill set to be able to communicate in that way and to ask those questions.
Right.
I want to kind of move the conversation a little bit, because you talked about you enjoyed being in person for boot camp, and now you're working a remote position. And so, like, I'd love to hear your take on, you know, that transition and why you chose remote work over being in person, since you liked the in-person boot camp so much.
Yeah. So I discovered that it's not really being in an office with people that I like. It's more of the interactions with people. And I think working remotely is not a barrier, I mean, a blocker for team communication and having fun with your team and having great exchange and and also I'm a mom, I have kids, and I need to be available. And working remotely is the easiest for me to be able to continue to drive them to the doctor or to whatever activities they have. I like to be here when they come back from school, and if they have homework, I don't want to just run all the time. It's something that I did when I was in France. I was working full-time from 8 to 6. Picked up the kids at the nanny's house at 6. And then you just had to run. And it's, honestly, it's just not a life. And yeah, since I had the opportunity to change my career, why not changing the way I was working? And it's something that I decided like early. I wanted to work from home. It was the easiest for me. So yeah. And what I experienced today in my team, we have great way to interact with each other. We have one-on-ones, we have coffee breaks. We have team lunch like every Thursday. We eat together, and yeah, it's great. And we have a lot of pairing session if we want to. And yeah, so it's really not about just being in the office. It's just how you want to create relationship with your teammates, you know. And yeah, so far it's been 3 months now that I'm full-time remote. And I think I've made a good choice. I really like it.
Is everybody on your team full-time remote?
Yes, we are all full remote. Yeah. We are all in the US. So I'm in a team that is separated two teams. My little team is only in the US, and the other little team is all over the globe. And it, for example, it's another challenge. We had like a summit for our team that is called Globalization, and we had to have everybody on Zoom at the same time. And so we had people during the day, we had people during the night. But I think people are willing to do that because everything is great and we have great relationship between us. So yeah, it's great. Maybe next time it will be us and less that will have to be up at night. We'll see.
I think that's such a great point that you made about it's about the relationships, right? It's not necessarily about the place that you are, because there can be very successful remote teams, fully remote teams, and there can be very successful in-person teams, and there can be, you know, ones that are not successful at all. And it just depends on, you know, how are you building your team? How are you creating the relationships or understanding the other people and like recognizing them as like a person and not just somebody that's got to get this work done. And so I think that's so important when people say, well, you can't have the same relationships on remote teams that you can in person. And for me, I found way more value in the remote teams that I've been on than I ever have in my in-person teams. And I think it's just really about, you know, what is the value of that team?
Yeah, and I never believed in the, you know, these companies who have like baseball and ping pong tables and stuff like that to create a great environment. It's not about that. You can have like as many foosball table you want and your people won't talk to each other. So it's not something I really believed in. And I mean, if the leadership like is willing to show that they are okay with being remote, that they are the way that they're communicating with each other is remotely, and sometimes they organize fun things, every people in the hierarchy will do it, because we do just what the leadership does. That's the way people work. So yeah. And if your company is organizing great events just to have people talking to each other and meet whatever the department they are working on and everything, I think this is how you create great relationship with anybody in the company. And for example, my company, last week or 2 weeks ago, I don't remember, they organized like, you know, every trimester, what they call table for six. So you have to register in advance. They have like a list of people, and people are randomly chosen. They create a table, so it's a Zoom room, and they give you like a budget to order something with DoorDash. And you are eating your lunch with people you wouldn't have worked with, maybe. So yeah, it's I think that's the kind of events that needs to happen if you want your employees to just have great relationship with each other.
I think that's really cool. I was going to ask, well, you had mentioned that your small team does like lunches every week, right? I mean, just kind of eat together kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. Is there any other sort of, not like the big summit level stuff, but any sort of week to week stuff that that your team does or the organization does to improve, you know, your communications and your relationships on your team?
Yeah. So, well, in my team, we have like a rule to have like at least one Zoom meeting all together. So when we don't have any, we organize like a coffee break or something like that. It's short, but it's just, hey, what did you do this weekend? And blah, blah, blah. So this is something that we do. We also use the new feature from Slack, the Slack Huddle, something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we use that mostly to talk with all the people we have, like in Melbourne or Singapore, Dublin. What else do they do? So yeah, there's the table for six. There's they encourage. Okay. So onboarding process. We are in teams during the onboarding process, and so we have like some activities to discover the company and everything. Yeah, and they encourage us to just stay in contact. So like every month, month and a half, I have this meeting with my team that I onboard with. And so it's, you know, it's tiny things like that. They also organize, like, my company works a lot with charities. They encourage volunteering and they encourage people to work together to do some volunteering as well. So it's all the things that they are, I think they are trying to find ways for people to show their common interest and build on that. I think it's, yeah, it's a great idea. They have, yeah. And we have also, like societies, we call that. So for example, we have like, society for women, for women in engineering, for parents, for people from the LGBTQA community. It's great. And yeah, they try to, yeah, to build on that and think it, this is how you make people talk to each other, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. My wife works for Teach for America, and they have a lot of stuff, and similar kinds of things, you know, that they do to sort of promote interpersonal relationships, you know, on their teams. Sometimes I think they might go overboard. You know, they spend, you know, a lot of time on Zoom altogether, but it's cool. And I mean, and she loves her team too, you know, and they're all spread all over the place and all remote and everything too. It's very cool. And I feel like it's important to, when it's one of the things that some parts of it happen automatically or can happen automatically when you're all in the same building, you know, and obviously there's plenty of unhealthy, you know, places in the world, but like I feel like it takes more concerted effort when you're you know, on a remote team to do that sort of thing, because it's easy to go back into cave person mode, right? And I think the thing you said at the beginning when I asked this question was about how a lot of it comes from leadership. I just wanted to touch on that again, because I feel like that's really true and it's important. You know, if leadership just is like, makes some sort of rule that everybody has to do something, but doesn't, you know, don't participate in it or anything. I feel like lots of times that ends up just causing resentment at best and doesn't actually promote, you know, any healthy things. So I think that's really cool that the leadership is sort of part of this whole process. Yeah. It's neat.
Yeah. And also we are, so we have offices all over the world. We have employees all over the world, and some rules are in place as well to make sure that people who are not on US time zones also feel part of the company, you know? And I think that's great. We have like all important meetings have to be recorded. That way, if someone is on another time zone and can join, or even if someone has an emergency at home and they have like to pick up their kids, they can still have all the information that has been shared during the meeting. And I think it's a game changer. When people do that, remote work is really possible. Otherwise, I don't know. Yeah. If your job is only for US market, maybe it's easier, but if it's for somewhere else, or you have people working from elsewhere, you have to implement these things, and you have to force it. Otherwise, like you said, the first thing people do usually is just to keep it.
It's nice too when you have communities of belonging where you have shared interests. It's easier to learn more about somebody there, and then also to like branch out beyond that, because when you have an environment that, you know, feels one like you're comfortable there. There are these people around you that you trust and you know, and they'll have different overlapping communities than you would have too. And so then there just becomes this like, you know, you have these sub communities, but then it all works together to feel to create something that's like this nice, big, supportive community that allows you to do so much more. Because when you feel safe in a space, when you know that you can trust those people, then you're more likely to grow and to take chances or risks or be innovative and move faster. It's so funny that it's not more highly valued on teams. Like, oh, well, that's not, it's not a valuable thing. That doesn't help us with our product. But it does because of the side effects of having a supportive place. So I know that there are certainly lots of people out there that are not interested in remote work. There are struggles that are associated with it as well. I know for me, you know, I work remotely and I don't have an office space. So sometimes it's like really hard for me to stop. Like, oh, well, the computer's there and the kids are outside playing. I'm going to sit down and do this one more thing. What have you found to be useful to kind of avoid some of those struggles?
So I have two kids. We live in a two-bedroom apartment. and my kids have been at remote school last year. So, yes, there are struggles when you want to work from home, especially in today. you can do just what you can do with what you have and the time that you have. So instead of stressing about having like a super quiet room for yourself with closed doors and just try to use what you have and just work on that. I changed my desk space like 4 times last year, and I finally find my corner. You know, it's not. I'm in the living room, so yeah. With the kids, it wasn't easy. At some point, we were 4 people in the apartment having Zoom meetings at the same time. You adjust. I think it's even easier now. Before, I don't think people were really inclined to understand that maybe you have a dog, maybe you have a kid, maybe you have even a baby, or even elderly people that you have to take care of. Now they understand better what it is, because people were forced to work from home. And I think this is when, if you really want to work from home, this is when you can find your thing without really stressing out about it. So at first, like, for example, I was in the middle of the living room and I had the kids passing behind me all the time. I can't do anything. I can't tape my kids against the wall just for them to not walk behind me, you know? So yeah, you just try just to do with what you have. Zoom can allow you to put backgrounds, just use that. And your kids, well, my kids, so they are 12 and 10, so obviously it's easier than with little kids. I don't really have the experience with little kids, but at least with my kids, just told them that what I was doing was important, and what I was doing will maybe make us have one day a bigger house. Like, with maybe I will have my office and they will have their own bedroom and they will have to run behind me all the time. But if nobody is making any effort now, maybe it won't happen. So this is what I tried to explain them, and they were big enough to understand that. And so we tried to establish rules, and every week we were changing the rules because obviously we tried something and it was not adapted. And so we had to change. And, but yeah, it's just, at first I was like super stressed and I didn't want anybody to be on camera and everything. And it was just impossible. And it made me really nervous. And like, for example, during the boot camp, my son really wanted to see who was my instructor. And so he was on the, like on the couch with me and he was like, you know, just putting his head. So at first it was just the hair and then the nose and then the full face. And you just can't, you can't avoid that. But yeah, so I reviewed the rules like multiple times. I tried also to organize their schedule, mine, to make sure that at least I had one moment in the morning and one moment in the afternoon with quiet time where I could set up like some Zoom meetings and, I mean, the most important ones, a good pair of headphones. I mean, a lot of tools exist just to do that better. But yeah, you just, I mean, unless you are already working in a company that will give you a stipend to buy a set of new monitors and everything, well, fine, just do that. But if you can't, just, and also one thing that was really important beside all the material aspect and organizational aspect, it was communication. When I was in projects during the boot camps and they wanted to code all weekend for 8 hours a day, I was like, I'm sorry, I can't. I can't. I can give you 3 hours in the morning and I can give you 3 hours in the afternoon and that's it. Because after that, I need to cook. Maybe I need to take care of my kids. Maybe I need to take care of me. Also, you know, I mean, yeah. So just being clear with people, maybe some people will have some expectations from you and you just have to be really, I mean, just tell the truth and say that things maybe won't happen like that. And as soon as you, I mean, the sooner you tell that, the less struggles and blockers and frustration it creates. So I think my only advice is just let it go.
I think it's such good advice, you know, and I don't know if this is a mom thing or not, but I know at least a lot of moms that I know, we do a lot because we have to do a lot, right? And so then we want to continue to do things that we enjoy doing or that we've done before really well. And it's really hard sometimes that it just doesn't happen, or sometimes like we're in a different stage of life and we need to let those things go. And it can be really hard to do that because you're like, well, I enjoyed this, or I could be good at this, or I will have enough time. But I think you're right saying like, have clear communication about things and be okay with communicating that. So, I mean, and that's another thing that goes towards creating trust. You know, if you don't just keep pushing through, just be open to begin with. And like, yes, I can do a little bit, but no, I cannot do that. And so there's like the clear communication, there's boundary setting, but then also talking about being flexible with things because you can try things and it doesn't work. And just having that self-awareness, I think, is such a great tool to be able to work with different groups of people and to work with your team and make sure that, you know, everybody knows where you're at, because that's what, you know, that's what creates good teams.
Yeah, I think so. Like recently, so my kids finally returned to school. and so I have to drive one in the morning because the school is really far away. And also I think he's too little to go by himself. So I just told my kids, my team. studying August 11th, I won't be able to accept any Zoom meeting at 8. It will be 8:30. That's it. I mean, and nobody said, oh my gosh. No, everybody say, oh yeah, of course. That's it.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think sometimes we are more stressed about saying the thing more than really, yeah, we overthink too much, I guess.
That's for sure. Well, I think, you know, all of these things that you've talked about, I think one of the benefits of COVID and the pandemic and stuff is that people are more open and willing to this. And I mean, moms have been impacted, I think, more than any other group, or they're very high up on the list. But, you know, I also think that it's good that eventually I think there will be more opportunities for moms, because things like this are regular. Like, it's okay to have kids on your screen. It's okay to say, I have to take my kids somewhere. And in some sense, it's normalized this. And hopefully that's something that we carry forward, because, yeah, remote work is that's what makes things doable for me as well, to be able to take kids to the doctors or to a field trip or, you know, whatever is something that I want to be doing. And I'm glad that I have that ability to do that and to, you know, be able to take that time and not have to be in my car for a really long commute somewhere. I knew a mom that was looking for work pre-COVID, and she was looking for her first job. And she said, well, the only one that I was offered is a 2-hour commute, 2 hours each way. It's not worth it. It is not worth that. That experience is not that great. And I feel like it's ridiculous for anyone to ask somebody to commute that. Like, that's a red flag in my book. Like, yeah, spend all that time in your car.
Well,
she could work from home.
Yeah, it's something that we know a lot here in the Bay Area, because you have a lot of people, you know, working for like the giants, like Google and Apple and Facebook, but they can't. I mean, they are old enough to have kids, and so they can't have a roommate. So they have to live far away, where prices are better, I guess, to live. So I know many people doing like 2 hours commute morning and afternoon. And I think it's just crazy. And I'm glad for them that we are in remote days, and now they are just working from home and everything is fine.
You know, when you're talking about sort of breaking up your hours of your day or whatever, you kind of touched on it, but I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you, between work and also taking care of, you know, your family and everything, how you kind of build any habits or anything for self-care and, you know, like staying healthy and stuff like that. If you have anything, you know, any tips or anything like that, I could probably use some.
I don't know if I have good tips for that, but so actually it was really funny, because when I was a stay-at-home mom, I never found time to do anything, like at all. And since I work, I trained almost 7 hours a week. I don't know. I don't know. It's just, I don't have any tips. It's just, I know that like every hour I need to go out of my desk and just take a few steps, just because, you know, it's good for your eyes, it's for your brain, it's good for whatever. And so it's like, oh, I need to, launch the dishwasher. I will do that. And in the meantime, I will do some stuff and come back to my desk. And so it's something that I try to do like every hour. Training. Why do I train so much? Probably because I pay for someone some coaching. So it's a good motivator. You know?
are they scheduled? I mean, if you're paying somebody, so is it like it's on the calendar?
That's,
or is it like,
They don't what they don't check when I do it, but they can check if I've done all my trainings every week.
Okay.
And then it's just up to me. So I try to like start early in the morning to do my training before working. It just doesn't work, especially since the kids are returning to school. It's just, it's too much. So yeah. I do that late when the kids are eating, because we make our kid eat together, and then with my husband we eat later, like that we can have a sense of not date night, but just night, you know, time for adults, you know. Yes.
Adult conversations, yes.
Yeah, adult conversation, that's right. So, yeah, when they are eating, I train. And so, yeah, when they are eating their rice, I'm squatting. No, I don't have really any advice. It's just, I don't know, if you think you can do it in the morning, just put your alarm clock earlier. I'll do it, just no pressure. And sometimes I don't do it, and the next day I will do two trainings. It's fine.
Yeah. I like your approach with the sort of getting up through that throughout the day as well. And that, like throwing in the like grabbing a couple chores, you know, or whatever in the meantime, or doing that sort of thing. I think that's cool. I think that's a cool approach.
It's really something that I love with remote working, is being able to sprinkle the chores during the day like that. It's not just a block of, I need to clean today. No, you do that just, you know, when you think about it. And it's great like that. So sometimes I'm like, I have some laundry to fold, and I have my test running on the monitor. And so while the tests are running, I'm folding some t-shirts.
I think I need to do that really instead good idea. Of checking yeah. Twitter.
Yeah. I just try to be chill. And the more chill I am, and the most I do. So I guess, hey, maybe it's my advice. Just chill.
But I think in the Moms in Tech meetup that you led a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about self-care. And I think this goes back to what you were talking about earlier today, because a big part of that was clear communication too, right? Being able to express your needs and to be able to take time for yourself or do things. And I think that the first step is always just recognizing like, okay, what is going on with me right now? Because I think, I don't know, we just move so quickly that we don't ever think that. Like, I'll be like laying in bed and then like suddenly I'm like, oh, now I understood. I sat at my desk for a really long time and then I felt really grumpy. But if I had gotten up and taken a walk, I probably could have chilled out and not felt this way right now.
Yeah. And I think it actually ties really well in with the having like the happy teams and actually being much more productive. You know, you said when you feel a chill, you actually do more work, right? And it can seem counterintuitive, you know, like if you think,
exactly.
Oh, you know, if I force myself to sit at my desk, you know, and bang on whatever I'm working on for hours and hours and hours, you know, it seems like that's the only way to get things done sometimes, you know, but the have healthy, you know, healthy self and healthy teams, you might be spending time doing things that aren't like writing code or whatever, but it turns out makes all of you, you know, yourself and then your team much more productive ultimately, which the, like, I think studies have shown this to be obviously very true too, but it can be hard to, or it can be easy to lose sight of that, I think, when you're in the, I don't know, in the thick of it, you know? So I think that's really, I think keeping it chill is very good advice. I like it.
Well, Arlie, it's been great to have you here with us. Really appreciate you talking about this, because this is something everybody is dealing with now. Before we wrap up, is there one piece of advice that you would give somebody who's starting a remote job now?
Yeah. having a journal, like every day, taking notes, and sometimes revisit your notes, like maybe a week later, 2 weeks later, and not everything, because you might not know why you are noting that, but at some point you will discover that it's probably a good context for something. And yeah, it's something that worked really well for me. Sometimes I was like, okay, I need to type that. I don't know why, but, and it just, yeah. Oh yeah, remember that from that day. And I noted that, oh yeah, that's the piece of information that I need. But yeah, having a journal really helps. And that's great. That's it.
I love that. I think that's great advice. It sounds really cool. It sounds like a very good idea too, for somebody new joining a team.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Arlie.
Thank you.
Right, thanks, Arlie.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was produced by Dan Ott and Becca Harrott-Weigel and edited by Dan Ott. If you have questions or comments, you can hit us up on Twitter at virtualcoffee.io, or you can email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. You can find the show notes, plus you can sign up for our newsletter to find out what Virtual Coffee's been up to on our website at virtualcoffee.io.
Please subscribe to our podcast and be sure to leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.